Opening the show was I Am Goddess by Lisa Thiel, in honor of the great She and the two priestesses we're going to be talking to tonight, Reverend Judith Laxer, the foundress of Gaia's Temple in Seattle, and Foremother Z Budapest, who will be discussing her huge project to put together a tribute for the late Merlin Stone. But before we get to these important subjects and these wonderful ladies, I have a couple quick announcements. First of all, I just want to make sure, if you haven't listened lately, that you know you can get Voices of the Sacred Feminine on iTunes. You can download them right there, and there's a button for subscribing to the podcast as well. And as always, I'd like to thank Penny, one of my listeners, for making that happen for me, because I am totally I'm not a techno nerd, let's put it that way. I would not have known how to begin, so thank you, Peggy. Also, save the date, because Sacred Sundays, Sunday services for Goddess Advocates are starting at the Green Man in Hollywood on July 24th and continuing for each consecutive fourth Sunday. Now, I'm one of the priestesses that started that a while back, and we went on hiatus for a while, but seems the community wants those again, so we have agreed to start those up, and I look forward to seeing you there. So check out my webpage at KarenTate.com. Go to the Sacred Sundays button and see what that's all about. So, if you're down in the Southern California area in Hollywood, please come see us starting July 24th and every consecutive fourth Sunday after that. Also, coming up, if you're in Southern California, the annual Isis birthday bash. This year it's going to be a Mediterranean feast, and it's set for July 31st. So save the date and start sending in checks because of our space. We are limited to a certain number of people. We've been celebrating the birthday of our great mother for almost a decade each July, the month of her birthday, and we are continuing the tradition this year, but this time with a feast instead of a tea. If you're interested in joining us, it's going to be in Hawthorne, and I'm happy to give you the details. Just email me, and I'll send you the menu and the cost and the location. And another heads up, our guest for next week, we have a double feature for you. At the top of the show, we have Marie Jones. She's a returning guest, but this time she's talking on another subject. We're going to be discussing peace science, how new discoveries in quantum physics and new science may explain the existence of paranormal phenomena. Yes, that's kind of a departure for this show, but she just piqued my curiosity so much when she was on the show recently talking about the history of the Trinity that some of you too said, please get her back. We want to hear what she has to say. So she will be back next week. Then in the second half of the show, Melanie Hudson will be with us, and our topic is Sexy, Spirited, and Strong, Becoming a Positive Energy Woman, which is the title of her book. But that brings tonight's announcements and comments to a close, so we'll get to our first guest, Reverend Judith Laxer. Let me tell you a little bit about her and her work before we begin her chat. I have her bio right here. Let's see. When Judith moved west from New York City in 1989, she took her lifelong interest and study in spirituality and psychic phenomena and began the professional transition from a career in the performing arts to one in metaphysics. Judith became a licensed ordained minister in 92 and enjoys a successful private practice as spiritual counselor, psychic, certified hypnotherapist, shamanic healer, and ritualist, providing all rite of passage ceremonies. In 93, Judith began creating and teaching classes and workshops on the divine feminine, spiritual development, and psychic awareness, offering her work at spirituality conferences and gatherings nationally, as well as in her private mystery school called Moonwise Mystery School. Judith is the founding priestess of Gaia's Temple, an inclusive ministry that fosters love of the divine feminine by honoring nature and the qualities of compassion and relatedness. With over a decade of service, the Gaia's Temple community creates balance in the world, valuing respect, love, peace, and integrity. Judith treasures her profession and dedicates her work to restoring the balance of female and male energies in our culture. For more information, go to gaiastemple.org. Man, Judith, you just sound like a mirror image of this show. That is everything we stand for here.
Thank you. I know, you know, when you listen to it all at once like that, you're like, wow.
That does sound impressive. Yeah, that well, you know, we're the women that are going to change the world, you know.
That's the plan anyway, yeah.
Yeah, that's the plan. And, you know, and what I really liked as I was reading this, you know, I was trying to make a mental note to make sure I said this to you, is when you said you're teaching spiritual development. And now, I don't know exactly what you mean by that. I think it could mean a lot of things. But, you know, I've been in groups before where, you know, you were taught to do ritual, you were taught about the wheel of the year, you were taught about the goddess, you were taught about magic, but you know what, there wasn't a whole lot of spirituality going on, you know, and I really think it's important, especially as we rebirth the goddess, to teach people what spirituality is, teach people about ethics, teach people what it means to be spiritual and how to treat one another. Is that kind of what you mean by that?
That is what I mean by that. And all of the other things that you mentioned as well, you know, the training in magic and the nuts and bolts of, you know, this goes here and that goes there and stand like this and speak like this. You know, that's all a part of it also. But the spiritual development part, I think, is very much, well, first of all, I do think that it's very individual because everybody's at a different place. And so, you know, depending on where you are, your development is going to be different than the next person. So there's no cookie-cutter form of that. And I do work with individuals that way. So, but I think really what it's connected to, what spiritual development is connected to, really is maturity. And we are not a very mature society, I don't think. And so
I agree.
We're operating like adolescents. Often, and we're, you know, very self-centered, and that's appropriate for our adolescence. But as mature people, and certainly as, you know, men and women and men who are hopefully making a stand for a brighter and a more secure future for ourselves and for Mother Earth, we've got to grow up.
Yeah.
We just have to grow up. And
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, it's one thing to know what to do. It's one thing to know the way to operate, the way to speak to people, the choices to make. And then it's another to make the conscious decision to act that way. And that's where I think spiritual development comes in. And that's why, you know, it's an examination of what your values are. And it's looking at the type of life that you want to be living and then kind of backtracking and say, well, if that's the life that I want, then these are the actions I must practice. This is the way that I must operate in the world. And it's a commitment.
Hallelujah, girl.
Yeah, it's a commitment, too, you know, because it's so easy to just slip back into the same old ways of being, you know. That's a very well-worn groove, you know, and climbing out of it and staying out of it takes effort, yeah.
Well, you know, between our Sacred Sundays and you up there in Seattle, you know, we're trying to do what we can on the West Coast, but,
yes.
Well, you know, and here's the thing, and I don't know, maybe I'm, you know, there's a little of this in what you're talking about. You know, I've become such a political activist because I find, even people in the goddess community, I run across across people who can't really, they haven't figured out that maybe they are not reconciling their politics with their spirituality either.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And you know, and we don't have to go there if that makes you uncomfortable.
No, not at all.
But you know, it really bugs me when somebody who claims to be a pagan, claims to be a goddess advocate, will then turn around and support a woman, you know, a political party who's for big oil, who's for cutting Social Security, who's against women's rights.
It
makes no sense to me, you know.
Yeah, they'll, like, leave the circle and get in their Hummer and drive home.
Yes. Yes,
yeah.
Exactly. And,
yeah.
And you know, I know growing up as a Catholic in New Orleans, I think, unless I'm remembering wrong, you know, the priest used to get in the pulpit every Sunday and tell us the values to live by, you know. And I don't know that that happens so much in goddess spirituality circles. I think people have become so afraid of losing, you know, people, you know, losing people in the circle, or offending, or causing discomfort, that we don't talk about that.
Yeah.
And
well,
I think that's a shame.
It is a shame, and I think that pagans are very skittish. You know, they're very skittish. A lot of pagans have kind of thrown the baby out with the bathwater, with regard to religion. You know, they know that they don't want what happened in their birth religion, or however they would grow up. You know, they grew up and they were conditioned, and so they kind of just throw all of that out. And that is a shame, because I think those values are, of course, very, very important. And I think that it is in spiritual community that you learn about that and also have an opportunity to learn to walk your talk. You know, in Gaia's Temple, so it's a we have our church status. It's a nonprofit organization. We have our church status. And it's a service that is all about the divine feminine, of course. And our values are respect, love, peace, and integrity, and I talk about that in the service. But I have to be very, very careful, because as a church, which is kind of interesting, I've been, you know, very clearly warned that we are not really allowed to talk about politics. We're not allowed to advocate for any particular candidate or campaign for any candidate. You know, so I have to be very careful, really, in the things that I say up there. But I also, I couch it somehow so that I am advocating that people do walk their talk, and that it's not just rhetoric, but that they have to really get in touch with what matters to them, and then they have to live according to those values
and not
just think it. But
I think there's
a fear that's going on, and I think pagans in general are skittish because, you know, I came out of the broom closet so long ago that to me it's just as natural as the day is long. But I still meet people every day who are still kind of in the broom closet. And they're afraid of losing their jobs and upsetting their families. And, you know, there's still, unfortunately, religious persecution going on, or fear of it. And I think
you know, they have a reason to be afraid, you know, maybe in a blue state, maybe not quite so much. But,
yeah.
I mean, look at I don't know if you're familiar with it because you're in Washington and we're in California. But, I mean, Patrick McCollum, he has been a leader in the goddess community for a really long time. He talks about Tier 1 and Tier 2 religions here in California. And we all think we have equal rights, but we really don't.
No.
And Christianity has infiltrated all layers of society and politics and government. And, you know, some of these people, you know, are zealots and don't believe in religious tolerance and freedom of religion. And they can affect our life I would be afraid to be a pagan going into a jury, you know, going to court with a jury of all Christians.
Oh, yeah.
Because the odds
are against you.
I really would. I can understand that concern. But
I think the good news, though, is that, and, you know, Starhawk has been such a strong influence for me. It was, you know, reading her Spiral Dance book in the mid-80s that just really, the door flung open wide. And, you know, she does not see, of course, and she does not see her spirituality and her social activism as separate at all.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a perfect example of of how beautifully that can be done. And the good news is that, you know, we can affect change in our magic within our circles.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't necessarily mean you have to be out, you know, walking in a protest to affect change.
Right.
But you can't put all of those things aside. Like I said, leave the circle and get into your gas guzzler on the way home, because it's just not congruent.
Well, yeah, I mean, you don't, like you said, you don't have to be publicly be, you know, being seen, being a public voice, but, you know, are you signing the right petitions online? Are you voting
right.
for the right people? Or you
where
sending
is your money
donations?
Going? What are you
yeah.
purchasing? Yes, you know,
all
so
of that.
There's a way to be conscious, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Well,
yeah.
you know, I know we sort of got off on a tangent here, although I think
okay.
that was all important, you know.
Yeah. yeah.
Because, you know, we're at the crux, you know, we're at the beginning of building goddess temples, and I
mm-hmm.
think it's important to talk about, well, you know, are they gonna be a force for change in the world, or are we
oh,
just
yes,
you know, playing a dress up, you know?
No. They are a force for change in the world. I believe it. I'm
well,
praying for it. I hope so.
Well, yes, you and me both. Well,
mm-hmm.
let's start with how you came to learn about goddess, you know, because people always find it interesting to hear other people's personal stories, I think.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I was raised in a Jewish family, but we were not religious Jews. We were kind of traditional Jews, so I never got any education with regard to religion. It was just more like a cultural thing. I knew we ate, like, certain foods at a certain time of the year, but I had no idea why. And then when I got a little older and started to do a little research, I just did not spiritually resonate with it at all. As I said, the culture is beautiful and all of that, but spiritually I just found that, you know, women were like ninth-class citizens, and it just, you know, that's a very bold statement to make. I'm sure there are a lot of Jewish women who will not like that I just said that. But I just, you know, it just did not work to me. And so I began on an exploration, and, you know, music, art, these things had always been very, very important to me. And then, so, you know, I did a little exploration. I checked into Christianity a little bit and, you know, here and there. And then it literally was three books that turned it around for me. Starhawk Spiral Dance was one in the mid-80s. Z's book, The Holy Book of Women's Mysteries, was also just, you know, so influential. And also Charlene Spretnak's book, Lost Goddesses of Ancient Greece. And it was like, oh, my goddess, this is it. This is what I am. There's a name for me. And also, I'm not alone, you know,
uh-huh.
because you just have this kind of sensibility that, you know, where is the feminine in all of this? You know, God the man. And God the man is great, but he did not create this whole thing by himself.
Uh-huh,
you know? So it just never really clicked with me. And then when I discovered goddess, everything just opened up. My whole life changed, really.
It's a slippery slope.
It is a slippery slope, yeah. Don't open that door. You'll never come back out.
Well, you know,
so.
I posted on Facebook today. I had a revelation last night. You know, I don't know about you, but sometimes like at 3 o'clock in the morning, I'll wake up with a thought in my head and I can't let it go.
Right.
And I woke up and I thought, you know what, you know that how they use the expression the big lie to refer to, you know, Nazi propaganda. I thought, okay, the big lie, we know that's associated with Nazi propaganda. A lot of us now associate it with GOP and Fox News.
Right.
But the first big lie, wasn't the first big lie patriarchy sweeping goddess under the rug?
Yes, ma'am, it was. That was the first big lie. That was the ultimate big lie.
Talk about
because
a propaganda campaign.
Yeah, well, everything because everything else is like has flowed forth from that.
Yeah.
Every other patriarchal nightmare, every other nightmare can be likened back to that, to the loss of women's power and the imbalance that has been created because of that. So that was the big one. Right there.
I mean, you know, I really think so when you look at the thousands of years of history that's
mm-hmm.
affected in the women's lives. You know, women become chattel, basically, you know. So, okay, so those three books, and you're on your way, but there's a big leap between discovering people like you and who you are to actually starting a temple. That is a major commitment.
Yes, that is a major commitment. And, you know, what happened for me was that as you said in the bio, that I was ordained in, so I was working in a lot of psychic fairs, and I was meeting a lot of people who are on, you know, what we call the woo-woo choo-choo, you know, the kind of alternative scene with regard to spirituality, and that's how I found the organization that ordained me, and I was became ordained on the summer solstice in 1992. And because I knew that I felt called to a sense of spiritual service, but I also knew that I didn't want to jump through anybody else's hoops, you know, and go to any sort of seminary or fit into any organized religion that already existed.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew that I needed kind of the spiritual authority of an ordination, but I didn't want to be tied to any particular religious doctrine. So
mm-hmm.
this organization provided that for me. And then I started to offer, you know, weddings and funerals and baby blessings and, you know, really got familiar with different rites of passage. And so kind of on a private level, that sort of spiritual service was happening. And then one day it just occurred to me, you know, Sunday morning, everywhere on the planet, people are gathering in places, houses of worship with others of a like mind to worship. And there's really no place for that for people who worship the goddess. Now, I also understand, of course, that, you know, a lot of this occurs in private circles or groves or, you know, just groups of people who get together. They want to remain autonomous. They're not looking for anything that's like a church. In fact, you know, that's what I mean. They want to throw the baby out with the bathwater. I'm never going there again. But I also know that there were a lot of people that I was meeting in my private practice who were looking for other people like them and couldn't find them. So I just thought, you know what, I'm just going to offer a goddess worship service. Let's, you know, just toss it out there. And so I had just moved into a new office here in Seattle, and on the second Sunday of September, I offered a service. The teaching was, I call it a teaching instead of a sermon. I use lots of different words so that it's not, you know, churchy at all. And I offered a teaching on Demeter and Persephone because it was coming on to Mabon of autumn equinox. 12 people came, and they loved it, and they wanted to come back. And so I offered it the next month on the second Sunday, and that was over 10 years ago. it was a fluke, you know. And what's so interesting is that I am a very self-directed, rather willful person, you know. It's like, I decide what I'm going to do, and I, like, go for it. And, you know, and this was this thing I just thought, well, you know, what the heck, let me give it a try. It was a fluke.
She whispered in your ear.
She did, and it just turned out to be, you know, really the mission. I mean, I still have a private practice, but Gaia's Temple is just means everything to me. And it's such a beautiful thing that we've got going there. I think what's also unique about it is that everyone is welcome in Gaia's Temple, not just women.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a very important piece to me because,
yeah,
you know, like you were saying before about women becoming chattel in the patriarchy. And, you know, when I first kind of got in touch with my feminism and that branched over into my spirituality, I was angry at the patriarchy. And, you
mm-hmm.
know, I still can get pretty angry. I can whip myself up into anger pretty easily. But I'm really not interested in blame anymore. And
yeah,
men have also suffered under this patriarchy big time.
Yeah.
And I think what's going to happen, how this is going to turn around, is that priestesses like us who are stepping up into leadership have to open the door because we're not going to get very far without our men.
You know,
and
I
they need to learn
true.
What it's like to honor the goddess.
Yeah,
you
and know,
they're not
going to
do it if the door is closed to them.
Absolutely. You know, I have been a strong advocate down here in Los Angeles for that for a long time. I am grateful to the Dianic women who taught me.
Right.
And,
right.
And you know, because they were the ones holding the
space. And there's a time and place
when
that's what I want to be with, too.
Yes, absolutely.
Right.
There's a time and a place for women's only space, and if
yes.
men want to do it too, they can do it
right.
too. But to
exactly.
move forward, you know, we have to move
yeah.
forward together, not
yes,
separately. Because, you know what, I actually, you know, wrote a paper about why it's so hard for, you know, the pagan community to actually, you know, be a movement out there in the world. And, well, for one thing, you know, we never get ourselves organized. You know, we're like
right.
herding cats.
Herding cats, exactly.
But, you know, if you think about it, if you're an all-women's group, okay, and if you have a husband or a boyfriend or a son, how
mm-hmm.
committed can you be to the woman's group if your family can't be included? That is a
mm-hmm.
big stumbling block, I think, that
yeah.
that
yeah.
could potentially really hinder you know, hinder a woman's group, quite frankly. I think
right.
it has to be both male and female.
Yeah, well, you know, like you said, there's absolutely appropriate times for women-only space, and I do think that it is still important for us to be there and that women's empowerment is still so crucial in order to move forward and balance what's going on this planet. So I don't necessarily know if that means that that men should be welcome in a women's circle, but it is important that there are events that are about honoring the goddess that
mm-hmm.
men are included in as well. You know, like
yeah.
many years ago I was in a coven, and what we decided was we wanted to be in a women-only coven because we wanted to empower ourselves as women, we wanted to get practices, priestesses, you know, and so what we decided to do was hold the Sabbaths, the 8 points on the Wheel of the Year, and just open it to our husbands, friends, boyfriends, lovers, you know, anybody, so that we had our women-only space in between the moon circles
mm-hmm.
and all that stuff that we did, and then for the Sabbaths, everybody else could come, and it was a very nice balance.
Yeah, it sounds
you
like
know?
It. It really
and men
does.
Got used to, yeah, coming
yeah,
and realizing what it's like to stand in a circle, okay.
Yeah, I mean, because I found that I had to, you know, I had my women's group, but that women's group was very separatist and would not mm-hmm. allow for that, you know, even though, you know, they were based on the tenets of Z Budapest, and,
right.
you know, I've even asked Z Budapest, I mean, she started pan groups, so she was
right.
not against teaching men, but,
right.
you know, that was, they sort of cherry-picked that, you know,
yeah.
and
mm-hmm.
so I kept the other foot in a community that was men and women, and,
mm-hmm.
you know, they both offered a lot, you know,
yeah. Yes.
but I don't think I've ever done anything in all of these years that didn't always include men, because
yeah.
I get so tired of hearing women say, "Oh, well, women and men don't know what we're all about." Well, you know what? If we don't teach them, they'll never
yeah.
know.
That is exactly right. That is exactly right. And so in Gaia's Temple for the longest time, there'd be like maybe a man or two, you know,
mm-hmm.
but mostly women were coming. And, you know, slowly the women started to say, you know, "Honey, I want you to come," you know. And then, of course, once we were established and there were enough children coming, we offered now we have a youth program, which is fantastic. The kids go to
wow.
Pagan Sunday School, which is great.
Wow, I'm impressed.
Learning. I know, it's so wonderful. I watch those kids go downstairs, you know, and to Pagan School, and I think, oh my goodness, how my life would have been different if I'd been learning about the Wheel of the Year and how to make an altar and where the
mm-hmm.
north is, and, you know, can you imagine? But, you know, and then I think once that we had a place for the children to go, then couples felt like, oh, okay, you know, this, I don't know, in part, this is viable, but also, oh, now we can both go because not one of us has to stay home with the kids.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
The kids were always welcome, but, you know, they're squirrely in a service, and, you know, so we provided something for them that's age-appropriate, and a lot more families started coming, and the men started coming, and they, you know, came and realized this didn't mean they were going to be any less masculine, or it
mm-hmm.
wasn't, you know, a chick flick, or, you know, anything that's for women.
Well, you weren't angry lesbian feminists
yeah,
that were trying
exactly.
to take over the world and dominate men.
Exactly, yes, castration at the door before you enter, you know, all the fears, and, you know, but they're just, it's welcome, and it's beautiful. Beautiful. We've got some beautiful men, just wonderful. I'd say about a third of my congregation now is men. That's
good
lovely.
For you.
Yeah.
So now tell me, are you lucky enough to actually have a rented or a place that you lease, or do you?
No,
you know,
we're renting. We're renting a community center, which is beautiful. It's a beautiful place. And we have a great relationship with the manager of the building. It's a community association, so lots of different people rent it, but we rent it there for our services. And, you know, a big part of what we want to do with Gaia's Temple, of course, is, you know, sustainability is crucial. So we could probably stretch and get into a place, but we just know that we're not at a place where we could really sustain it.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
You know, we're building. And, I mean, building our community, building our coffers. And,
right, right.
Hopefully
sounds
one
smart
day.
Because you don't want a noose around your neck and then,
right.
You know, that puts you in a really bad space.
Yes,
I
really do not want that. I want this to be joyful every way, in every way.
So how often do you meet?
Well, we meet once a month. We meet on the second Sunday of every month. There were a couple of years when we were offering 16 or 18 services a year, but again, we found that that really wasn't sustainable. And that's another thing that I think that's particular to our culture, to the pagan culture. I don't think people want to gather more often than once a moon, you know?
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, there were some people who wanted to come every week, but not enough of them to really make it sustainable.
Right.
So you know, but
that's
those are the services. But then we throw in a whole bunch of other things, too. We've got a big spiral dance on Samhain that we offer, which is a big fundraiser for ourselves. So we have a lot of other community events. We have a psychic fair in April. We've got a picnic coming up next month. You know, there's
so
lots of other things.
You've got a lot to choose from.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I know we have. Have you heard of the Goddess Temple down in Orange County?
I haven't. Actually, that's Ava's place, isn't it?
Right. So you know Ava. So you know all
about
that.
Yes, we went to Crete with Ruth Barrett and Catherine Ritter a couple of years ago.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, good. So you know about that down there, and boy,
I do.
And
that's
a
women-only place, isn't it?
Yeah, it is women-only. Although,
yeah.
If somebody like myself, for instance, would rent the space, you could use it for men and women. But what they specifically do, they're women-sponsored services on Sunday. You know, yes, they are. They are just for women. And I tell you, I don't know how she, you know, she keeps that place going 24/7. And what an Amazonian feat, you know, that's got to be so hard. And that's why I was wondering if your place was 24/7 or what, you know, because.
You know, I would love nothing more than it than to have our own temple, like physical location for the temple, because I also know that there are so many other things that we would do if we had the space.
Mm-hmm.
But we're also kind of limited because it's a community center, so we're kind of subject to their schedule. So I have to, you know, check with them to make sure it's available, and we're paying an hourly fee, and, you know, there's a lot of restrictions when you don't have your own space. If we had our own space, we could really open up and offer a lot more, you know, to our community. We're not there yet. I'd love nothing more than to have Gaia's Temple be my full-time job. I would love
that. Oh, wouldn't
more.
That be wonderful?
Oh,
yeah, because, you know, the dilemma of renting a space is always, you know, you don't have your permanent altars. You have to schlep everything in every time.
Yeah.
And,
it's,
you know, people
very hard.
Underestimate the energy that takes, you know.
They do. And, you know, if you're doing it well, it looks easy. And then everybody thinks, oh, well, that's, you know, that's no big
deal. They don't need any
really.
Help.
Yeah, walk them out of my moccasins and talk to me about how easy that was.
They got it together. You know, they're not crying. So what are your services like? Do they look Wiccan or, you know?
No. It's, I call it, it's goddess worship and it's pagan general. It's not Wiccan specific, although I personally am Wiccan, so it's got, you know, definitely has that flavor.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not Wiccan specific because there are many people, and what's also interesting I'm finding is that there are a lot of people from other spiritual paths who are coming and enjoying Gaia's Temple as well, because, you know, I just talk sense up there, and there's so many people who are really interested in caring for the planet, regardless of what particular spiritual path they follow.
Right.
So they enjoy learning about the different goddesses and the points on the wheel of the year, and so anyway, I just went off on a tangent. But what are the services like? So there's a lot of music, and I have different feature different people. Oh, you know, at the beginning, the song "I Am the Goddess" by Lisa Teal. She's just also a sweetheart, and I know her personally. And she came up here and sang in Gaia's Temple once. It was just lovely. She's
you lucky dog.
Darling. Yeah, she is just a darling bird.
You know, that gives me an idea. I mean, you heard me say we're starting Sacred Sundays. She's local down here. I bet I could, you know, if I twisted arm, I might be able to get her to come sometime.
I don't think you'd have to twist her arm very hard at all. She's
well, thanks for
delightful.
That idea. But, you know, I agree
generous,
with you so much,
being.
You know, with your idea, you said you're just sort of talking sense. I mean, what we decided to do with Sacred Sundays and what worked so well when we were doing it before and we're going to stick to it is, you know, while Goddess is throughout, it doesn't look like a Wiccan, you know, Sacred Sundays don't look Wiccan. It looks very much like Unitarian Universalist. And we talk about things like gratitude, dreaming and inspiration, you know, strength, fearlessness.
Right.
So we sort of, you know, Yeah, things that, you know, self-help sort of things that I think, you know, people can benefit from, you know, learning about or hearing about in relation to Goddess and in relation to what's, you know, what time of the year it is, you know.
Right, exactly. And that's kind of the model, right? So in the services that I create, the teachings that I create and offer there are based on the wheel of the year. So as we go through this cyclical model of time, you know, what is the dance of the goddess and god at that time? And then how can we embody that energy? How can we utilize the energy that's occurring at that time in our personal lives? And as you go through the wheel of the year, you know, you embrace the light, you embrace the dark, you look into your own shadow, you find where you have courage, you find what you need to sacrifice, you find where you're going to put your love. So, you know, those themes, that's part of the spiritual development, you know, to be thinking about that. And
you sound so inspired. I would love to hear you give one of your Sunday teachings. You know, have you ever thought about taping them and putting them on YouTube?
Well, you know, it's so funny at the beginning. Well, we do. We actually do have a YouTube. It's more of an introduction about Gaia's Temple, so you can YouTube and search Gaia's Temple, and there'll be a 9-minute thing about our temple. But, you know, at the beginning you were thanking one of your listeners who was helping you with the podcast because you're not you're a technophobe or whatever.
Yeah, whatever you call it.
Hello.
<I'm> horrible.
That's me too. And we just actually created a new website. And our plan is to podcast these services, and not visual, but audio, because we've been taking them, you know, so at least people can listen if they can't make it to the service.
Yeah.
But again, you know, you need to find somebody who's dedicated, who's willing to edit things and get it on, and apparently says, oh, that's easy. You just, you know, blah, 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 and then they start talking a whole other language, and I don't know what it is.
just do it.
So, but that is the plan, actually, to get the services up there so that people can hear them.
Oh, that's wonderful.
So there's music and there's teaching. Go ahead.
Well, and I feel compelled to tell my listeners who, you know, because that will be a wonderful source. There's also a woman on Blog Talk, I believe. Her name is, I think, Mama Fortuna. She does audio, just plain audio, Sunday services. I don't know if they're every Sunday, but for those, you know, I get emails all the time from people in some red state that are in the closet, scared to death, utter the word goddess, and say, your show's a lifeline. You know, imagine if those sorts of people, and even people who have community, you know, or living in a safe place, you know, they could tune into, you know, pull up your podcast, tune into Mama Fortuna, you know, for Sunday services on Blog Talk, and, you know, they have Goddess Church then.
Yeah,
I think that's really important. But I'm sorry, you know, my mind is just going all over the place here. Forgive me.
That's okay. That's fine. But it is important because then people who don't have something locally will still be able to get the goods, you know?
Yeah, and that's
one of the advantages of our Aquarian age and all this technological stuff, even though I'm entering it into it kicking and screaming.
So when you started your nonprofit, I mean, I know when I did my nonprofit, it wasn't easy. It was very challenging. Did you do all your paperwork, or did you hire an attorney? I mean,
we didn't hire an attorney. We had an attorney in our congregation who stepped up to help us with that, and we also knew that, you know, I also knew I had to form a board of directors. And so I chose a couple of people who were near and dear to me, some women who had come through my mystery school, and I knew, you know, I knew their integrity and their commitment. And one of these women who actually didn't come through my mystery school, but she was in the process of going through getting her master's degree in organizational development. And she came on board, and during that first year, we created our mission statement, our vision statement, our values. She really provided all of the structure for us, and she was able to get credit toward her master's degree. It was just a perfect win-win. And
wow.
So a lot of what we, you know, just all of the organizational stuff that we needed, we were going to operate in a circle, you know, in consensus and circle format, and, you know, these people were going to be responsible for this. I mean, all of the things that you really needed, the foundation when you begin, she provided incredible leadership for that. But it's not easy to start an organization. There's no doubt about it. And we have the people on the board have a 2-year commitment. And sometimes what that means is, you know, sometimes it takes about 2 years to get in the groove of a project and something that's moving along, especially, you know, I'm very proud that we have over a decade of service. Last September was our 10-year anniversary. It just blows my mind. But still, in the big picture, we're babies. You know, we're still very young. And there have been houses of worship that have been around for hundreds of years, you know. So we're still very new at this. And, you know, it's neo-paganism that we're doing. So we're in many ways, since we don't really have a model, we're kind of making it up as we go along, and there's lots of growing pains. And so often what happens on a board where people only have a 2-year commitment is that by the time that 2 years is up, when we're really getting in the groove of things, people move on and, we're starting again. So there's always changes and challenges. But I'll tell you, I have been so blessed. And what that tells me is that there's a need for this in the community. And somehow, I don't know how, but like you said, she whispered in my ear, and somehow I'm at the crux of it. So.
And it sounds like, too, the people were there that you needed. You know, it wasn't pushing this boulder uphill. You know,
no.
She sort of provided you the pieces to put the puzzle together. And, wow, if that isn't magic, you know, that's what you see.
It was absolutely magic,
yeah. Yeah, that's Goddess, you know, Goddess's hand, you know, working in this. No, I'm very much the practitioner and the, I don't know, sort of the atheist, too, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, I really approach this as, you know, Goddess in her rocking chair in the heavens, as well as Goddess such just ideals that'll change the world, you know. But when I see magic like that work, you know, it's just reinforcement that, you know, there is really something out there, you know.
And how can you not believe when things just come together so synchronistically and beautifully?
Absolutely.
And you know, I started Gaia's Temple in September of 2000, and we didn't get our nonprofit status until 2004. So there were 4 years when I was just offering services, you know, in my little office, and then it got to the point where we had like 35 people crammed into that space, and I thought, oh my goodness, we need a bigger space. And, you know, so we moved on and then just kept moving, and then we found this place where we are now. And so in 2004 is when it really became the nonprofit organization and like an established entity, and started got the website and really began to, like I said, become an established entity out there for the community. Prior to that, it was, you know, a lot of people that I knew in my personal community and in my mystery school. And, you know, there's quite a strong goddess contingency here in Seattle. Seattle's very progressive. It's just a beautiful, beautiful place for this. And but it wasn't until 2004 that all of this sort of stuff really got going. So I had about 4 years of practice and, you know, kind of slowly building and getting the word out. And you know, like a Mother's Day, we have a beautiful Mother's Day that we do every year. And this year we had a magnificent poet come and offer some of her poetry, which is just magnificent. Her name is Dr. Melody Ivory. She was amazing. And at the end of the service, she came up to me and she said, how come I never heard about you? You're the best kept secret in Seattle. It's like, we're not trying to be the best kept secret. We're trying to get the word out. But again, I think that comes down to skittish pagans. You know, they're afraid to like talk about, you know, like a Christian will come to work and talk about what their pastor said or their priest said on Sunday at the water cooler and work. But a pagan is not going to do that, most likely.
I know what you're saying.
Yeah, but there's a challenge there.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, when you said you're the best kept secret in Seattle, it what flashed in my mind's eye was I saw you on the cover of a Seattle magazine, Gaia's Temple.
Well, you know, this is very interesting you should say that. There is a magazine here in Seattle called Seattle Woman. And a couple of boards ago, we were trying to get me in there or on there or something. I have a feature, you know, because this is such a unique thing. And they just didn't bite. They were like, well, there's a lot of women ministers, and, you know, maybe we'll do a magazine on da-da-da. But no, none of these women ministers are doing goddess worship. They're ministers and, you know.
They might have been afraid, too, you know.
I think so.
Unfortunately.
Yeah.
Well, so Judith, what inspires you?
The earth inspires me. The garden inspires me. You know, it's interesting, and I wrote about this in my very first blog post, was that, you know, the nature of a calling, it's so hard to describe, and it sounds so hokey. Like, oh, I have a calling, you know, aren't I, whatever, you know, like it's some, oh, something.
Ego thing or something.
Yeah, like an ego thing, exactly. But it really, it's very hard to describe when you do have a calling to spiritual service, and that is exactly it. And there are times when I feel very inspired. There are times when I feel like I'm carrying the weight of the world. So it's not always, you know, joyful and loving and happy.
Yeah,
there are times when
it's
kind of like the glorious burden. And but what does inspire me is the earth, and also, you know, when I look at what's going on this planet now, and, you know, everything from global warming and how she is speaking to us, and the short-sighted, silly choices we've made for so long, and how we're in the 11th hour, and this is the time to step up and do something, and it inspires me to try to be one of those people.
Yeah, yeah.
Step up and do that.
Yeah, because, you know, it's going to take so many of us, you know.
It is.
I mean, it's going to take so many of us to, you know, to push that paradigm shift.
Yes,
and,
yes, it is.
You know, I know what you mean when you say, oh, you know, you have a calling. I mean, Sarah Palin has a calling.
You know? Yes. Yes.
But, that's what a scary thing. But you know, but I know what you're talking about. You know, because we feel like, I don't know. I just feel that, you know, goddess spirituality provides the roadmap for the future. Whether you want to believe in, you know, goddess as a deity or not, you know, the ideals provide us, you know, a roadmap to, you know, make the world a better place for more of us. And it's so important what you're doing.
And even just looking at the earth as a sentient being is a kind of a spiritual understanding, as opposed to just a resource for us to plunder. Once you kind of personify the earth as a goddess, as a woman, as the great mother, you know, we all say Mother Earth and we say Mother Nature, but we kind of, you know, say it flippantly. But when you really think about what that means and how we are desecrating our mother with these ridiculous actions we're taking, and short-sightedness, and how we've lost that interconnectedness, you know, that right there is something that can really turn it around. So you're right, you don't have to believe in gods and goddesses and their stories and the myths and this and that and the other, but anyone who is connected to what's going on the planet, that beautiful thing that's underneath our feet, you know, that alone. And I think that's why people from so many different walks of life find what's going on in Gaia's temple to be so joyful, so beautiful. That's the compassion and relatedness part that is part of our mission statement, you know, that we have compassion for what is going on this planet and what Mother Earth is going through. We can relate to that on a personal level, and that is that's a spiritual understanding.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, how would you say the teachings at Gaia's Temple empower your congregation?
Well, I will use this last Sunday as an example. Two Sundays ago, I gave the Father's Day service in Gaia's Temple, even though Father's Day was last Sunday because we meet on the second Sunday. And then I was a guest minister at a Unitarian church, a UU church, Unitarian Universalist Church here in Edmonds. So I was a guest minister for their Father's Day service just this last Sunday. And so in this service, I was talking about, I called it Renaissance Man, and I was talking about the new male and how, you know, we women have been doing a lot of work in transforming in these last like five or so decades. We've raised our consciousness. We have proven we're not the weaker sex. We have stepped up. We've opened our minds. We've opened our hearts. We've opened our voices. We're taking action. You know, we've done a lot of work of transformation in the last 50 years or so. And I said, and then what if our brothers did the same? What if they really stepped into present time and tried to be who and what is needed now? You know, stepping up when they need to step up, stepping down when they need to step down, or stepping aside, knowing that doesn't mean we don't love them or need them or desire them, or, you know, just stepping into present time for what's happening now. So having a Father's Day service in which men were asked to recognize the feminine within themselves and to understand how the divine feminine is and will change everything, and to include her in their worship is both, I think, was a foreign idea for a lot of these men and also a beautiful thing. And you should have seen them. They were glowing at the end of the service. They just loved it. They loved that they were being invited to step into their emotional truth and just their presence. It was beautiful. So, I that's an example of how it can empower the men. But I think, you know, at each service, there's a sense of there's a direction, or I try to guide and direct about actions that we can take, not just what we think, not just what we believe, but what we put into action. That's where the transformation occurs.
Mm-hmm.
It happens in the action that we take. And that's
so
empowering.
Well, I mean, if you can't get political, I mean, even though we know the right wing churches tell their congregants who to vote for,
yeah.
I remember there was a big thing here in Southern California where there was this progressive Christian church got in trouble because they were talking against George Bush and the Iraq War. Well, they got in trouble, but of course the right wing churches get away with it every Sunday.
Right, they do.
So I know you can't get political with your people, but what sort of actions do you recommend they do so that they're walking their talk?
Well, we've had services, for instance, about prosperity. So, you know, this is a big one because prosperity is it just branches out into so many different directions. But for the sake of what we're talking about now, when you really look at where your money is going, what do you spend your money on is a political statement. So, you know, teachings about that, about becoming more conscious, about looking to where you're spending your money. Where is it going?
Mm-hmm.
Is it just, not only is it just flying out the window, but is it going in some hidden way to support something that you don't believe in? Taking
right.
the time to little do a little research. You know, who's the one who's producing this product that I'm buying 24/7? You know, where is my money going as a political action? You know, that might be one way. And I do. I talk about, you know, we ain't going to study war no more. And I have, you know, we had a huge celebration when Obama was elected, and you know, but it's not that the teachings are not politic, but they're not
right.
about politics.
Right,
you know?
Right.
Yeah,
right.
So that distinction that goes on there.
Forgive me for asking this. It might sound like a dumb question, but did your congregation talk about Avatar when it came out?
Yes. Yes, it did. We had some conversations about it. I think I might have even talked about it in the teaching about something. I don't remember exactly, but yeah. What
because
did you think
that
of that movie?
If that wasn't Goddess Church,
no kidding.
You know, on the big screen, I don't know what was, you know. And, you know, as I've said before a few times on the show, I mean, the Pope was so moved by it, shall we say,
yeah.
and people's
yeah.
reaction to it. He felt compelled to come out and say, nature will never replace religion. And
yeah.
I just couldn't help but laugh my butt off, you know.
I know.
But
we don't
thought,
see that as separate.
Exactly.
We don't see nature and religion as separate.
Yeah, and I, you know, and I'm thinking to myself, gee, would Jesus really think, would he be on the side of exploitation and corporate power and government takeovers and blah, 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 you know?
Well, we know that the teachings of Jesus as the Prince of Peace and what they have done with his words are two completely different stories. One of my favorite bumper stickers is, you know, Jesus save me, and then in smaller letters it says, from your followers, you know? It's like,
So do you get any progressive Christians that show up, you know, like the ones that are, like the Mary Magdalene Jesus, you know, sort of folks that look at them as the divine couple kind of thing, you know, sacred,
yes,
masculine,
I
divine, feminine?
Yes, I believe that we do. I, you know, what I'm remembering, though, is this was many years ago now. There was a woman who was coming. She has since moved to Washington, D.C., but she was a regular congregant, and she had some family in town and invited them to Gaia's Temple, and they were, I guess, kind of diehard Bible-thumping kind of Christians, and she just said, you know what, when I go visit them, I'm expected to go to their house of worship on Sunday morning, and I do. And I sit there, and I'm respectful, and now they're here, and I want them to come to mine. And I think it was her brother. So her brother came, and halfway through the service, he got up, and he walked out.
Wow.
I don't even remember what it was I was saying, but I didn't think it was all that, you know.
It probably wasn't.
And he walked down there and said, well, we lost another one, you know, and it kind of got a bit of a chuckle, but.
Well, you know, I've had, at some point somebody said to me, these ideas, they're radical. Do you know some of these radical women? And I said, you know what? I don't really know radical women. Would you call radical women or men people who care about peace and justice and equality and partnership?
And
you know, and when you put it like that, they sound kind of silly.
Yeah, it's just because it's become so normalized, you know, the way that spirituality has been for so long, it's just kind of, it's the is factor. That's what one of the things that I was talking about in with the men this past Sunday, you know, I kept inviting them, like, what if you decided this? What if, one cute little joke I got in there, it's like, what if men said they were mad as hell and they weren't going to take it anymore? And, you know, what if men decided they were not going to compete with each other for more or better? What if you sweet brothers refused to be measured by the size of your bank accounts? Which was kind of funny. I was going somewhere with this, and then I got all caught up in the joke. Oh, but then it just inviting them to see it differently. And I said, you know, when we're so used to being the way we're being, that we think that if we stop being that way, we would disappear. Right? We would just disappear because this is how I am. This is how everyone knows me. If I stop being this way, I will cease to exist. That's kind of the fear that people have around change. If they make a change, their ego identity will no longer exist.
And maybe that's a good thing.
Well, yeah, the ego identity letting go is a good thing. But, you know, I assured them, gentlemen, you would not disappear. In fact, I dare say most of you would be able to show up fully present for the first time. But it becomes so normalized. We just so, you know, for 6, 8, however, thousands of years, well, actually, it's been 6,000 years, I think, since this last wave of patriarchy anyway. And, you know, we're just so used to hearing God in masculine pronouns. That's
right.
Another huge difference at Gaia's Temple, too, you know, to hear she and her and hers instead of always he and him and his.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and I like the idea, too, what you did for Father's Day. And, I mean, I don't even know where it came from now because, you know, all the stuff you read and people you talk to, and who knows, maybe I even thought it up myself. I don't even know anymore. But, you know, the idea of men, you know, men's new roles as protectors of the, you know, of life. You know, that's, you know, that's, you know, I think really the place that has to become the new normal, you know. Imagine if men could really embrace that idea, protectors of life, instead of this, you know, this competition and survival of the fittest and this individualism that, you know, has everybody believing that, gee, if you're, you know, if you're poor, well, God mustn't be blessing you. You must be lazy, so go die under a bridge, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah, it's terrible. It's just terrible. Yeah.
Well, so now, so what about the children? We've talked about how the temple empowers the men. You know, I know how it's empowering the women. But, you know, tell me some of the success stories with the kids.
We decided how we wanted to do this was we didn't want the children to feel that they weren't welcome in Gaia's Temple. Like, we were ushering them away because, you know, they couldn't sit still. So that was one thing we wanted to make sure they did not feel. And then, but we also knew that they were a little, you know, too squirrely to sit there for a whole service anyway. So we decided the way to handle that would be to have them with us at the beginning for the creation of sacred space and, you know, the invocation and all that sort of stuff. And then we found this fantastic song on the Circle Round CD that's When You're Magic. So then we sing the song When You're Magic to them, and then they go down the center aisle, and everyone kind of makes a bridge with their arms, and these kids go downstairs, and it's just delightful, and it's so heartwarming. And then we have two wonderful teachers, and they, I tell them what the service is, the theme for the service is going to be, and then they create some sort of a teaching for the children that is age appropriate but still pertaining to what that theme is. And then they, you know, they create sacred space. They make their own altar down there, and they always have arts and crafts project. You know, summer solstice they made they made little sun catchers for the windows, and, you know, Mother's Day, they came up with Mother's Day cards, and, you know, so it's just beautiful. It's just wonderful. And to see these kids growing up, and some of the older ones now are there kind of helping the younger ones, and, oh, it's just a beautiful thing to see. It's just,
so on average,
gives us hope for the future, you know?
Absolutely. So on average, how many congregants comprise Gaia's Temple?
Well, that is a kind of a tricky one to figure out because not everybody comes every time.
Mm-hmm.
But we average between 75 and 100 people per service.
Wow.
Yeah. And
wow.
Yeah. That's what I mean. I know that I've tapped into something that is just so necessary. We need this, you know. People have been looking for this for so long. And then it depends on any given day, you know, how many children will come. We've had as many as 15 in the youth program. Sometimes there's only two or three kids there, too. So,
right.
And that's from toddlers on up.
Wow.
So,
you know, I am awfully impressed because, you know, I mean, that might not sound like a lot of people to, say, the established Jewish temple or the established
right.
church, you know, Christian church on the corner, but that
right.
is humongous for, you know, for a pagan gathering, I think.
It
is. I think it really is.
Yeah, and I think that if everybody who had ever come to Gaia's Temple came at any one service, we probably could not fit them all in, which
wow.
is kind of nice. But the other thing is, then I think, well, is it only that we have these many people here because we're only offering it once a month?
Mm-hmm.
You know, if we offered it more than once a month, maybe, you know, they would kind of spread out and they wouldn't have as many people. And but like I said, it just didn't seem to be sustainable. You know, we had a maybe 35, 40 people at that second service of the month, but not... but not the same amount, and certainly not enough that we could afford it. And, you know, the whole thing about goddess worship is sustainability. I mean, that's really what's most important to all of us.
Absolutely.
You know, sustainability on the planet.
You know, forgive me for asking, but a lot of these questions I'm asking is because if other people out there are trying to, you know, think about, well, can I do this, you know,
right.
Do you charge for the services?
And, no, we don't. We don't. We pass the love offering baskets at the end of the service and people contribute. We do have a membership in Gaia's Temple. So anyone who comes is like a member of the congregation. But if you want to become an official member of Gaia's Temple, then we have an annual campaign where people make pledges. So one of the requirements of being official member of Gaia's Temple is to pledge, make a
mm-hmm.
financial contribution. And it doesn't really matter how much. Of course, the more the better. But, you know, what matters is that we know what we can rely on, so we know what we can budget based on what's been pledged.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second requirement to become official member is to participate in the induction ceremony, which we do during the service, and that's a beautiful welcoming for the new members. So, but we don't charge, no.
And you're not paid.
Operate.
You're doing this all as a service.
No,
to the
I am
community.
Now getting, thankfully, I'm getting a part-time salary because
oh,
I'm,
good.
It's a full-time job, but I do take some now. But the first,
well,
like, 4 or 5 years, I didn't, you know.
Well, Judith, let me, you know, I see Z Budapest has popped up onto the switchboard, and we're
okay,
going to be
starting
great. Her show in a minute. But I don't run just yet.
Okay.
Have you ever spoken to her?
Yes, I have. I've brought Z up here to the Women of Wisdom Conference in Seattle, so she
okay.
does know me. And
okay,
I went
so you...
to one of her Goddess 2000 down there.
Okay,
in 1998.
Cool. If you hadn't spoken to her yet, I was going to give you the opportunity to talk to her. But
give her my love.
I will, and I'm sure
okay.
and she can hear us. So Z, just give me a minute. We're going to get to you here. We're wrapping up. But Judith, as we close tonight, is there, you know, one thing that you'd like to tell listeners that maybe I haven't asked? I don't know if it's just advice or I don't know, whatever, you know, let it be your own inspiration.
You know, my best advice to anybody about anything is to keep the faith, because I think that life will toss you on this stormy sea, and it's so easy to just drop your faith, and then the quality of your life really just declines. And so whether that's a devotional practice whether that's, you know, just meeting with people of a like mind, whether it's going to a museum in order to stay inspired, or whatever it is that keeps you in a place of inspiration. And, I, you know, as these words are coming out of my mouth, I know I'm saying them to myself too, because, of course, we all lose hope from time to time, and, you know, we
sure.
all question. But I think that keeping the faith is just the most important thing, and especially in these accelerated times when so much is uncertain. So my best
right.
advice to anybody is, find what speaks to your soul and feed it, nurture it, and don't let it go.
And if people want to see more about your temple, or, you know, start tuning into those podcasts, how do they find you, Judith?
Well, the website is GaiasTemple.org, so that's G-A-I-A-S, as in Sam, temple.org. And we don't have the podcast up there yet, but hopefully that'll be happening shortly. But there's all kinds of information there. About, everything about Gaia's Temple is there. And then also I have a private website, which is judithlaxer.com, and that links to the Gaia's Temple site also, so you can learn a little bit more about me and my private practice that way. And if you're ever in Seattle on the second Sunday, do come and stop by.
Well, you know, you are just infectious. And I can see why people would be inspired and keep coming back to your services. You are really wonderful. You
thank
made me feel
you.
Good just talking to you.
Oh, thank you so much. This has just been a joy. I'm just thank you so much for having me on your show. I've just thoroughly enjoyed
it. Oh, it's my pleasure. Well, listen, I'm going to mute you now, but if you
okay.
want to, it's up to you. You can stay on and listen if you want to hear what Z's going to say, or if I know you're probably busy. If you have to go, you just go. But I just wanted
okay.
to let you know I'm not going to disconnect you. I'm just going to mute you, and you can either hang up or, you know, do whatever it is you have to do, okay?
Okay. Thank you so much, Karen.
All right, well, thank you, Judith, and thank you for being out there in the world. You hear?
I do hear. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye. Well, if you're just tuning in, this is Karen Tate, hostess of Voices of the Sacred Feminine, where we discuss goddess, the divine feminine, the resurging interest in right brain thinking, the feminine consciousness, the great she as deity, archetype, and ideal, and how these values and benchmarks just might save the world, just will save the world. And you've been listening to Reverend Judith Laxer from Gaia's Temple in Seattle tell us the story of founding the temple and how its existence is impossible. Empowering her Seattle congregation. So, in just a few minutes, we'll be getting to tonight's second guest, Z Budapest. I just have to ask her for her patience just a couple more minutes, because before we get to her, I have just a couple more announcements. First, I want to thank one of my listeners, Dharma, for this wonderful idea. Instead of just asking for monetary support for the show, she said, Karen, why don't you give a free gift if people help you pay for airtime? So that's what I'm going to do. Listeners may not know that Blog Talk hosts no longer get the airtime free. We have to pay for this airtime. And so I just wanted to say that what we're going to do, if you send in a monetary support to Voices of the Sacred Feminine, you will get some sort of free gift. It might be a 3-CD set of radio shows. When I was on CBS discussing with other goddess advocates, sacred places of goddess around the world, or it might be something else. So keep us in mind, because, you know, just, you know, goddess teaches us what we tend to, what we nurture, what we nourish, well, it thrives, and what we neglect, it withers. And of course, thanks to those of you who have already sent in some monetary support. I really do appreciate it. And I feel like I'm sounding like a PBS fundraising drive, but you get the point. And please, if you're sitting there at your computer looking at the screen, just sort of look around for the three Fs. I'd love it if you would mark Voices of the Sacred Feminine a favorite. Be sure to become our friend. But maybe the most important F is the follow button. Click that button, so that you never miss notice of any of my new guests each week. That way you're a part of the growing family of listeners across the globe. Because, you know, sometimes I don't actually have the time to send out email reminders. Things just get so busy with so many different projects on my plate. So that way you don't have to rely on me reminding you. You'll automatically get a reminder from Blog Talk. And I rarely say this, but I want to bring it up tonight. Someone said to me, Karen, you never talk about your own books on your own radio show. And that's true, I don't. So I'm going to take a minute right now and tell you a little bit about my two books. Not much, just a tad, because I do have a lot of new listeners. I'd like to invite you to go to my website, KarenTate.com, and check out my two books. I feel very fortunate that they've garnered prestigious endorsements and awards. Sacred Places of Goddess, 108 Destinations is the first book, and my second book was Walking an Ancient Path, Rebirthing Goddess on Planet Earth. They're really like bookends. The Sacred Places book talks about, goddess around the world, as well as her sacred places, how to get there, whether you're somebody who has a passport or you're just an armchair traveler. Then the Walking an Ancient Path book, well, it talked a lot about sacred journeys we took in the past in the Earth section, but it's also divided into sections of the other elements like fire, water, air, and talks about goddesses' inspiration, talks about our tenacity, our strength, the politics within goddess spirituality. It talks about our emotions. There's lots of rituals, meditations, all sorts of helpful things that will allow you to birth goddess into your life or in the life of your community. So anyway, take a look at those. I have a special. Both books are $25 plus shipping and handling. I'm happy to sign them for you. Sacred Places of Goddess, garnered prestigious endorsements, and Walking Ancient Path, well, it actually won an award in the spirituality category of the National Best Books. And while you're at my website, don't forget the free stuff. It's there, and we all love free stuff. That's on my website, too. Besides the wonderful information, teaching, articles, there's free meditations I have there for spring. You can just download those. Those are on the Goddess Store page. I also have a new article posted. An article was published in an international magazine called La Luz, and it's titled The Inhumanity of the GOP, Always for Profits, Not People. Or check out my YouTube channel, look at the recent new posts there, specifically where I address the American Academy religion and discuss how secular law and goddess theology actually offers humanity a roadmap for a sustainable future and away from patriarchal domination and predator capitalism. And don't forget, if you're listening live and want to call in to my fabulous guests or myself, the number is 718-766-4662. I know most of you listen from the archives, but if you want to call in, when I see you on the switchboard, I'll get to you when we have a lapse in the conversation, and I'll invite you to offer your comment or question, and I'm sure Z will be happy to speak to you. So, as we're crossing this threshold into the second half of the show, our next guest needs no introduction. She's Z Budapest, one of the four mothers of goddess spirituality. So Z, welcome to the show.
Hi, Karen. Good evening.
Hi, how are you today?
We are fine. Settled in here and with the birds in the background. So if you hear some rustling, that's two little birds.
Okay. Well, I know you and Bobby, your partner, have been working really hard on the Merlin Stone tribute, and it was such a pleasure to get to meet Bobby in person this week when she was at my house, and I got the opportunity to be interviewed and be part of this Merlin Stone tribute, because Merlin Stone, her and Rhianne Eisler, they're the ones that really set me on this path. So, I felt really honored to be able to say something, are you happy with how things are going? I know you two are working your fingers to the bone.
Well, I went on the New York leg of this collection of women who have contributed to the goddess movement in significant ways. Most of them had been turned down by Merlin Stone, which for me wasn't true, because I came from the point of view of feminism needs witchcraft, because we didn't have any spiritual base. We didn't have anything that we could relate to as our sacred stuff, our sacred rituals. We had nothing. There was no culture. There was no spiritual culture for women. All we could do and think of back then is to change the verbiage in churches and put her name instead of always his, as you mentioned earlier in the show. And that was not enough for me. And I knew stuff from Central Europe. And my mother was a big collector of folk art and folk objects, and herself followed a kind of a folk artish temple building style that peasants came and bought and hung up on their walls and prayed in front of it. So mother was an altar builder for peasants. And I never seen anything else around the house but goddesses. This was very impressive because our country prided herself of not being a normal Catholic country that got conquered and had to cave in. But the first time our king was, the first king offered the country up to the Boldogasszony, who is our native great goddess. Her name translated means glad woman. No, I like a goddess that's happy, you know, good mood. Anyway, every August they carry around the hand of this first king in a casket because the legend says that he touched by accident the hem of the Queen of Heaven.
Wow.
And that made that part of his hand immortal. And here we are, quite ancient country by now, and they still get a hand in a casket every 20th of August. And
well, you know, there's not much.
The royal,
yes. Whether you're carrying around the king's hand or you're carrying around a goddess statue or,
right.
or Mary or a saint, I don't know. I don't see much difference.
No, it's the significance of even a touch of the hem of her cloak has confirmed immortality. The hand doesn't look too immortal to me. It's pretty withered. And we don't really know whose hand it is. Actually, nobody can really for sure know. But it's old. And the idea is not so much the hand, but the touch, that we
right.
were touched by the goddess. And this way, all of our churches are built to the goddess and her friends. Like we have St. Catherine's, St. Elizabeth. We have St. Elizabeth was actually a genuine queen who became a saint for generosity. She performed miracles. Let's not lose my way here.
Wait. Let me just make sure I ask you, because, you know, for some listeners who might not know what country you're talking about, say, please, you know, where you're talking
I'm
about.
I'm Hungarian.
In Hungary.
I'm Hungarian.
So in Hungary, you're saying, you know, they never forgot the goddess. Never forgot the goddess, and you were inspired by your mother. So you have
all these statues everywhere. I mean, you look at our buildings. Our buildings have full-size statues, all kinds of mysterious figures. Each time I go home, I examine them again and try to figure out. There is a goddess right across from where I used to live, and she seems to have ears on like Mickey Mouse. And I know that couldn't be right.
Well, Zee, you have a lot of books. You have a lot of books out, and I'm sure I don't know all the titles. Have you ever thought about writing about this? About, you know, the goddess in Hungary, and you know, how unique that place is, and how it, you know, is
so
inspiring.
It's interwoven in my autobiography quite a bit, and I hope to put some pictures in because it's hard to say. This background gave me wings. That was a good part. And that mother worshipped the goddess. And but that was natural. My grandmother worshipped the goddess even more because she called her the Virgin Mary. And my aunt Titi took me to church each time I visited back in Budapest. And that was just like no male images. Everything is round. Everything is Rosetta. Everything is, Blessed Virgin with her mother Anne, Blessed Virgin with her baby and mother Anne, St. Elizabeth, St. Catherine. It's just females everywhere. You cannot miss it. The religious warfare, however, did reach us too. And anyway, I don't want to talk about it more because it gets me totally away from why I'm calling you.
Okay, all right. So So let's talk about what you wanted to talk about tonight.
Yes, my feeling was for a long time now that while other professions, not too many, but especially the entertainment industry, has incredible honoring rituals for their people. They created a culture of honoring that people win prizes and people vote them in and then they get to dress up and the whole country is watching their boring show, honoring each other. But each time I see it, I think, why don't women honor each other more? Women must bring back their own honoring. Otherwise, nobody else will. I mean, look around. Who amongst us? We did such tremendous changes when we were young, and I must say I'm very pleased to hear Judith's report from the Gaia's Temple, because that to me shows that, yes, it happened. It's everywhere now. The goddess is everywhere now. Women are thinking about the goddess, making little altars, praying to her, casting a little spell. So I'm glad. I think we have pushed the great goddess through the veins of the culture. But if it wasn't for Merlin Stone and Maria Gimbutas, we would not have science on our side. We would have mythology. We would have a lot of folk art. We would have you can get a lot from folk dances and songs and whatever is left. But these are just the remnants, like the pebbles of what was there once, a flowering, full-force culture where every day was a holiday. Every day had a goddess, a protector, something to do, something to gather about, something to separate out, somebody to kiss, somebody to feed. It was a wonderful, rich culture, and that's in my holy book of women's mysteries, as good as I could get it, because it was mostly, you know, pulling it out from the teeth of library books that I had to fight to get close to. And especially Jane Ellen Harrison helped us a great deal. She discovered the woman's mysteries and the men's mysteries, which I also put in the holy book, but just briefly because I don't have time to develop that. That's not my job, I felt. But the woman's mysteries is my job, and it has not been easy to keep true to it. It somehow always gets a knowledge like, oh, we don't have our right. We don't have really a past like what Merlin Stone unearthed for us and Maria Gimbutas dug up the remnants, the cultures, and explained what you found. No, we can't have that. Women come from nowhere. Women don't believe in matriarchies because that never happened. And how can you even think about it? And this absolute, you know, calling the research of these two women ridiculous, which I came across just recently in a book, won't mention the name, but there is like a backlash against the woman's spirituality movement, the goddess movement, and that's because we got strong, because Merlin, who was a frail, wonderful, scholarly person, and beautiful with her red hair, and when she spoke, it was like gems, the words. She never spoke too fast. And anyway, Merlin got the goods on the goddess, and we absorbed it. And Maria Gimbutas dug up whatever she could all over ancient Europe and supported it. Now we have a culture. Now we look around, and wherever we go, there is goddess women singing goddess songs. Somebody's doing a dance. Everything is permeated. The women are touching the world with the idea that it is better to build civilizations and have happy and healthy populations and enjoy this planet instead of killing each other, you idiots. Why are we standing for it as mothers? We make children, they grow up, and then we let them go and kill some other mother's children. And there is no gain at the end. There is only expense. I don't see the point.
Oh, well, it's the military-industrial complex making a bundle.
Yeah, but you can't take it with you. You can't take it with you. You cannot even lend, you know, you leave it to your children. They cannot take it with you either. Nobody gets out here with money in the pocket. There is no pocket.
Well, it's the wrong values. You know, it's just totally wrong values is
it's
all.
Waste.
You know,
it's totally waste-oriented. And and the male part of our humanity, our the human beings, the women are way ahead. The women had quantum leaps. Women had consciousness raised several times. And we did send our kids to school. Now, isn't that a wonderful miracle? The girls are everywhere in colleges. They are the dominant. Our sex is dominant in graduation from high learning and getting diplomas.
Yeah, I think the statistics are showing that there are more girls graduating from college than boys right now.
So there'd be a bunch of smart women out there. They won't stand for bad treatment. They would do things. This whole vision that we had in the 70s was correct. The hippies won. I have to say that the hippies have won. And for, you know, drop out, we dropped out into a world that the hippies created. The internet, the world with the little click-click, the world that responds to touching and stroking. It's not a bang it like they were typewriter. It's stroking and touching. And it's very feminine, don't you think? The new technology is very feminine.
You could look at it like that. I hadn't before you said it, but I can go with that.
So we now perceive that with the feminine touch, a lot can be achieved.
Absolutely.
Nobody needs to die.
So Z, how did you get tasked with doing this? This tribute for Merlin.
In Search of Merlin Stone is my attempt to bring honor up as an issue for women's spirituality and do a first big honoring upon the passing of Merlin Stone, but also others who we didn't get to memorialize as a collective. They had their own little burials, like I'm just thinking of Mary Daly, for example, and the many other women who just had their family, if they had any. It's pitiful to see us heroes at the end abandoned, and it's our fault. We have to come together. Do you realize that I never met Rian Eisler? Never met her. She never met me. Why? Because probably we're not on the same panel, invited to be somewhere, and we speak, and then we meet. That seemed to be the only safety net we had. Oh, I can trust you because she was also on the panel, or you had some notoriety, or you wrote that very successful book. That should not be the bottom line. Our bottom line should be, are we in the same goddess movement? We come in together as a generation, and we should hold hands and elevate the spirit of Merlin Stone for first, and elevate the spirit of everyone else, and then know that we are the next spirits we are going to pass over. We be just spirits. And we want a culture left behind that honors the passage of women, and the ideas are revived and put back into circulation, so that what we have created and envisioned is not treated by patriarchy as, oh, nothing. Oh, women did nothing. Women came from nothing. There was never any Amazons. There were never any matriarchies. So we don't believe these lies. Women did come from culture. Women did come from strong places. Women had a better way to live on this rock.
Absolutely.
Which I call mother. Yes. And the men, as gender, now they say you hate men. Now, here is a big difference we have to explain. Individually, we don't hate men. But the values they hold that is prevalent now and leading us away from happy, joy on this earth are male values. And when they put each other down, emasculating each other, they always say, well, you're a pussy. You're just pussified. Mm-hmm. Democrats are pussies. You know, they say that. And I think to myself, let's give pussy honor. I mean, for heaven's sake, pussy is honorable. Pussy
and how
is
about
not
the C word, too?
And not a coward. Pussy is not a coward. Pussy gives birth. All kinds
well, you
of
know,
things.
I'd rather be a pussy than a bully. Well,
your head off.
We have about 15 minutes. It's already 7:30. So what do you want listeners to know about the Merlin Stone tribute, and what do you need? What do you need from people out there?
So we have a kickstart of ad there. We need money. Of course, we need money. And you can find it on merlinstone.net and go to the kickstart, or zbudapest.com. Everything also comes from my site as well. And I also written books. You can enjoy them. I cannot read this, Bobby. I don't have my glasses on. She just gave me a note. All I want to say is that big blessing on you, Kate, for continuing. And I know you pay for your time, and we are sending you some donation.
Oh, you guys don't have to do that.
Goddess donation. No, right is right. And I think that imagine now that we are in this beautiful big temple with dome, and all of us are dressed in this flowing see-through white with gold. And there we honor you. And you come to the middle, and the women hum around you, and we say, thank you for using your talents and your life energy to promote the goddess and peace on earth. So that's the only way to get there. And honor you as a sister and a warrior in a cultural war that the women are definitely winning. And that's how it should be. And eventually also big blessing on all the feminists. Say aloud, everybody, wherever you sit, I am a feminist.
I am a feminist.
Are you a feminist? Let me hear it.
Absolutely, I am a feminist.
I'm a feminist.
We need to rehabilitate that F word.
That F word is a good word. It means you're a womanist. You stand up for yourself. You love yourself. You don't think you are worthless. All of these messages are constantly promoted towards us as a gender by not being visible in the culture. And what you are doing, you are not visible, but you can be heard. You have to be part of the culture and have the energy to circulate your ideas. And that's how consciousness for the whole species will change. Plus a few more disasters coming down because of climate change. Climate change is the scariest. She says, I show you terrorism.
I think this is an important question that you're one of our elders. How would you answer somebody? I mean, I know this is a little off the subject of Merlin Stone, but this is sort of, you know, tapping into your crone wisdom. How would you answer someone who says, what is this global warming about? Is it goddess retaliating? You know, how do you see it?
No. What it is what it says it is. We have put too much dirt into the air, so the incoming sun is reflected back out. We get like in a greenhouse. We get danky and polluted, and it's nobody comes and cleans our big atmosphere outside. So that's warming of the icebergs. The rest of it is cold and rain and hurricanes. It's never got the warming that it counts is melting the big icebergs that hold most of the water on the planet. When they all melted, we lose a lot of land, for one thing. Mountaintops will be beach properties. Excuse me. We have to... Well, two things. First of all, we really have to switch to female planning of using energy. It's just never going to be with what we have outside. I mean, but if you want to cheer yourself up about it, just think about how exciting it is to be at the edge of this energy change. Last time this happened was when we invented machines and the industrial age was ushered in. Now we invented another world. And we discovered where we actually lived and finally started seeing that it's not a good thing to put too much water in the air and too much water, fresh water in the ocean. What I worry about is that too much fresh water would stifle the belt, the conveyor belt, because if that stops, Europe freezes over, mini ice age comes, not good.
Okay.
And then there'll be somebody who says, oh, no, it's not global warming, it's global colding. Well, yeah.
It's climate change is what it is.
It's climate change.
Absolutely. Okay, because I know, you know, some people always get confused.
One more.
Go ahead.
Forgive me. Bobby reminded me, the memorial happens to Merlin Stone September 24th, which is a Saturday, at Clearwater, Florida, which is near Tampa. We start at noon. There are little hotels you can come to, and I'm calling on all the feminists to come and stand in honor of what historically we have achieved. This is the time to begin the honoring business, not being afraid of each other anymore. Put that down. We aged out from that now. This is a time to come together. So September 24th in Florida, Clearwater, and it's a beautiful Unitarian church, just a lovely, lovely, top of the line, modern, and many great people are coming. Olympia Dukakis is coming. She has been friends with Merlin Stone, and a lot more friends who known her. It's going to be solemnizing, and then it's going to be celebrating, and then of course at the end we have the feast of the dead, which will be all cooked for us. So if you hear me, please put it on your calendar and make it down there for a big gathering of all the feminists who honor themselves through honoring each other and Merlin. And if she changed your life, especially come.
So so and this information is on your website.
And the Merlin site, yes.
And you, can you just repeat the website again?
MerlinStone.net.
Okay, and now for people who can't come, or people around the country planning to do, you know, maybe some sort of tribute in their hometown simultaneously with you, or is anything like that happening? Or
yes, we are going to stream it. So it would be great if people who cannot come would gather somewhere. And technology-wise, get smart about it, how to receive something that we can stream out from our place in Florida. We haven't done it yet before. We don't know what the goddess will help us, and we are bold, bold Amazons. We're going to connect the little dots and the wires and everything. And Bobby's laughing her head off. Anyway. So, yes.
So mark your calendar for September 24th, whether you're going to Clearwater or whether you're going to plan a tribute in your hometown to so that it coincides with what you're doing in Florida.
And that would be the first, and then I hope that it becomes a custom of ours. As women stand up. It may not be every year, but every so often it should recur, a big honoring of who we are, what historically we have achieved, what we have changed, and celebrate ourselves and our ancestors, our spiritual ancestors. I really want to have a little bit more class to the woman spirituality movement.
Well, I love what you're doing. I love what you're doing, Z. So now when you go to your website, is there like a PayPal button or something there that people can make donations, or are you asking for people to just send checks?
Well, it's a kickstart, and it's on MerlinStone.net. It's a kickstart, which I just learned about, but most people know what it is. It's a way to donate money, and we have a $5,000 goal, and the way it goes is a certain time. If we do not meet that $5,000 goal, then we lose it all. But if we do make it and a little bit more, we can keep it all. So
wow.
We hope that this works out in our favor, and there's a big blessing for anyone who does this. Help us get there.
All right, and is the donation tax deductible just in case people need?
It is. We are Women's Spirituality Forum, and we are totally tax deductible since the mid-80s. So
okay.
We usually just organize festivals and conferences, and now we have an online school as well. We are trying to do more and more. This just fell out of the sky because Merlin passed away in February, was it? February. and her widow called me up, and I thought, here is a big, big task. I put everything down that I was doing, and we picked this up. And the connecting tissue, we are now the connecting tissue. And I hope everybody who allows us to interview them, that we could at one time get together and just see all the footage. Yay!
That would be wonderful. Well, is there anything else you want to say about this before we have to say goodnight?
Well, women, sisters, mothers, aunts, be true to yourselves. Hold each other's hands. Kiss your little girls. Love your little boys. Don't hurt children. Love the future. Keep thinking that you are made of the same stuff the universe is made of. You are a star goddess, dust of stars. That's a big deal. That's a big deal. I haven't seen a blade of grass out there in the great billions and billions of universes that I'm looking at through the science channel. There doesn't seem to be any life. We may be it. Does that frighten us? Yeah, it does. Don't want to be just it. We want another planet just like ours. We are listening. Are you telling us? Is the radio show coming from there? What if we are it for now? What if this is it? How would you live your life? How would
wow.
you live your life?
That's profound, Z. That's really profound. It puts things on a whole different level, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. And more I watch, more it comes to mind. Blessed be. Thank you for having me. Thank you, all of you who are listening. And support this lady. We want her to stay online.
Well, Z, thank you so much for all the work you've been doing over the decades. And Bobby, thank you, too, for everything you're doing. And you know what? I'm glad to know you ladies are out there.
Yay.
Okay, good night.
Bobby doesn't really
good night. Good luck with the project. And it's September 24th, Clearwater, Florida. Mark your calendars, ladies.
At noon at the Unitarian Church.
Okay. All right. It's been my pleasure, Z. I'll talk to you again soon.
What?
Good night.
Good night.
Well, as many of you know, adversaries of the sacred feminine tried to sweep away awareness and knowledge of her for all time. And with that sweeping away, when the great she was made to disappear because of the religion of patriarchy, of selfish and disconnected men and their war gods, women and their power, their leadership, their spiritual authority were thwarted, repressed, became taboo, diminished, and disrespected. That's why here on the show, I am dedicated to recovering the great she, whether she be deity, archetype, or ideal. Yes, we intend to defy, to taste the forbidden fruit, to be powerful and uppity women, to throw off the shackles, look under every rock, behind every locked door, peer into the abyss of the past so we know why things are the way they are, so that we see the first big lie, how they have come to be turned on their head and so unnatural. And you know what? We are going about setting things right. People like Judith, people like Z, people like Bobby, people like Merlin Stone, all of our great foremothers. Why are we doing it? Because if we want to save ourselves as a species, I think we have no other choice. If we want to restore balance, harmony, wholeness, sanity, it's women with our like-minded brothers, armed with the ideals of the sacred feminine, our goddess, who will set things back on course. So let me once again repeat what have become the mottos for the show. The first one, by the 19th century German philosopher Arthur Schopenhauer, goes like this. All truth passes through three stages. First, it's ridiculed. Second, it's violently opposed. And third, it is accepted for being self-evident. And the second motto, is from Gandhi, and it goes like this. First they ignore you, then they laugh at you, then they fight you, then they win. Imagine women, imagine brothers out there, imagine a world with goddess restored to the center, imagine a world where goddess ideals prevail, imagine a world where equality, fairness, justice, partnership, all of those ideals of goddess, compassion, wisdom, nurturing, intuition, all of those things that she stands for, that those things are at the center with women and children and our men around us as our protectors. Imagine it. Well, we're coming to the end of the show, and I like to close when I can, and there's time, with some sort of inspiration or a blessing. So I invite you to close your eyes and take a deep breath and bring an even deeper focus to these words of prayer. Let's begin to shift our focus and go within. Let's go to that place where we connect with the divine, with our great mother, with our sacred self. The first thing I'd like to share with you, it actually comes from Hildegard von Bingen, and these are her words. She is divine wisdom. She watches over all people and all things in heaven and on earth, being of such radiance and brightness that for the measureless splendor that shines in her, you cannot gaze on her face or on the garments she wears. For she is aware in terror as the thunderer's lightning and gentle in goodness as the sunshine. Hence, in her terror and her gentleness, she is incomprehensible to mortals because of the dread radiance of divinity in her face and the brightness that dwells in her as the robe of her beauty. She is like the sun, which none can contemplate in this its blazing face or in the glorious garment of its rays. For she is with all and in all, and of beauty so great in her mystery that no one could know how sweetly she bears with people and with what unfathomable mercy she spares them. That comes from Sisters of Wisdom, St. Hildegard's Theology of the Feminine. Hope you enjoyed that. That really is beautiful. Got that from Hedge Church. On the internet. Well, listeners, I want to thank you again for tuning in this week, and for many of you, you've been tuning in for the last 3 years, and I appreciate your support and your loyalty, and thank you for being part of the Sacred Feminine family. And so please tune in again next week, where we have Marie Jones talking about psychic phenomena, where science and psychic phenomena meet and how science can actually explain it. And Melanie Hudson talking to us about being sexy, spirited, and strong women. So I think I will leave you with a beautiful song tonight so that we can end this awesome show with Z and Judith on a positive note. I'm going to give you something that I don't often give you because we usually don't have time. And this is from Lane Redman, and I thank her for allowing me to use some of her music on the show. This is called The Final Delphic Oracle. Now, it takes a couple minutes, not a couple minutes, it's going to probably feel like about a minute before it actually starts. So during this silence, in this next minute or so, just be patient, and then it will start. Well, good night, listeners, and come back next week.
Above all things, speak the truth. Do nothing to excess. Accept the gifts the gods have given you. Refuse not the advice of others. Make your own nature your guide in life. The king. The well-crafted temple has fallen to pieces. Apollo dwells here no more. There is no more oracular laurel. No talking spring. And the voice of the water has been silenced. All is finished. But here are my words. The muse cannot be silent. She sings within us forever. Her voice will be heard again. above all things speak the truth. Know thyself. Know thyself.